For KOSU, I'm Michael Cross, and it's time for This Week in Oklahoma Politics, along with Republican political consultant Neva Hill and ACLU Oklahoma Executive Director Ryan Kiesel. Last week we took off because it was spring break, a short week for lawmakers, and I figured there wouldn't be much to talk about. And then we get news of Senator,
legislators gone wild.
Senator Ralph Shorty. She's charged with three felony counts of involving child prostitution with a 17-year-old boy. The Oklahoma City Republican resigned on Wednesday and is expected to make his first appearance in court today. Neva, your thoughts on this situation?
Well, I mean, it's obviously a tragic situation on so many levels, but I think the good news out of this is that the Senate moved quickly initially to set the stage by doing what they did. And then, frankly, I think the resignation by Ralph Shorty was the appropriate court to take, and I'm glad it has happened so that it allows the legislature to kind of get this off the front page, off of their focus, and move back to the important business that they have to take care of. So an election will take place. It will certainly be something that will be talked about, I think, all through the rest of this session. But it's regrettable, and I think it certainly puts the light even brighter on the legislature to make sure that what they're doing, that they do actually get some things done and have some positive results coming out of this session.
Ryan.
You know, I wish we lived in a world in which Ralph Shorty felt that he could have sought help the moment he felt the desire to have a sexual encounter with a minor. And I wish that we lived in a world in which Ralph Shorty could have an honest conversation about drugs and drug use instead of running legislation that, if it had passed, would ruin and tear apart healthy and strong families. And he did that as a smokescreen, apparently to probably conceal his own drug use. And in both of those instances, the encounter with the minor and the drugs, Shorty felt compelled to hurt other people in unimaginable ways rather than look himself in the mirror. And he's going to be held accountable for that. But I think that we shouldn't lose sight of the fact that this is a symptom of a larger problem in our society. And as long as we continue to avoid honest conversations about sex, including sexual deviancy, we aren't any closer to protecting our children. And as long as lawmakers race to the intellectual bottom in any conversation about drug use for fear that they'll be seen as sympathetic to drug users, we'll remain even further away from helpful conversations about harm reduction and understanding the difference between responsible and dangerous drug use.
Last week, the Senate, and Shorty has since resigned, but last week, all the Senate did was just basically suspend him, and then, of course, took their four-day spring break weekend. Do you think the Senate should have done more, or was that the correct response?
I think they took a measured approach, and I think they did what was appropriate at that point in time, and certainly had the possibility of expelling him from the Senate had he not resigned. I think that may have been what prompted Ralph Shorty to take the action that he did. He was going to not have a role in the Oklahoma State Senate any longer. I think that was clear. So he'll have his day in court. He'll have, you know, all of these other issues that will have to be addressed. But from the standpoint of his district and being a legislator, that was over.
And do you think the Democrats will now be able to make a little bit of a run? It is South Oklahoma City, which has become more Hispanic. Do you think they'll be able to make a run for this district seat? It's Debbie Leftwich's old seat.
We've already seen some interest in the seat from some Democrats that I think are going to be strong candidates out there. I think the Democrats have a real shot at winning this. I think, you know, the bigger political takeaway from this is that, you know, I really do hope that this gives us pause. You know, we've seen this legislative session a lot of hyperbole about drug use. You know, we have on the House floor even this week heard some pretty outrageous statements about sexual behavior and sexual health. And I really hope that this brings Republicans and Democrats back to this idea that we need to have honest conversations about these topics, because as long as we are talking in extremes and hyperbole and not really looking at evidence-based ideas about how to have a healthy drug culture and a healthy culture around sex in our state, then we shouldn't be surprised when stuff like this happens, whether it's a state senator or somebody who's just on Craigslist preying on young children.
Well, you know, it was interesting, too. In 2014, when he ran, he got 52% of the vote, and the Democrat got 42%. There were 6% to the independent. So I think the idea that this can be a very competitive race in a special election, and I think given the backdrop of the fact that folks in that district, in some measure, I think are going going to be very unhappy with what's occurred in their voice at the Capitol and the state Senate. So they may pay more attention to the resume and what these folks are actually standing for and running on, and that will make for a very healthy process.
Hundreds of thousands of Oklahomans hoping to get a job in the state government might have had their information hacked after a security breach at the website okjobmatch.com. Ryan, just kind of as somebody who's been hacked, you know, your thoughts as a lawyer, what does a person need to do if their information might have been stolen?
I mean, they first and foremost need to start checking their credit reports. They need to be on the lookout for folks that are using this identifying information to get credit, to apply for services, whatever that may be, fraudulently. One of the best ways to do that, I mean, there are free services that are provided by the government that will allow you to go in and check your credit score, check your credit reports, get a history of what's happening there. This reminds us that, you know, this data that we put out there in the world is not entirely safe. And it can be used in this instance, if you have social security numbers that can be paired with birth dates and addresses and names, you can apply for credit. But then in addition to all of the metadata that is collected on social sites, everything else like that, the digital image of who we are as an individual is a very complete image and probably more complete than most folks realize. And so right now in 2017, there's never been a better time to begin, if you've been one of these folks that have been hacked, you know, to start, you know, protecting yourself, but proactively start thinking about how can you protect yourself and your digital accounts online, whether that's, you know, better passwords, whether that is, you know, putting in some sort of a VPN service to protect hackers from getting access to your local networks. These are things that folks, even non-techie folks, can begin to do for themselves.
Neva.
Well, and it is. I mean, it's amazing in the world we live in. I mean, you look at the 400,000 plus here in Oklahoma, and this also affected folks in 9 other states. Mm-hmm. So these third-party vendors that are basically managing this type of data and this volume of data, I mean, we're seeing more and more of these issues and bringing in the FBI and bringing in all of these experts to try to deal with it is not going to totally curb it. But Ryan's right. I think we as individuals have to be very proactive in our own efforts to make sure that we are diligent to do the things that we can to help prevent some of this.
This is the final week for bills to get voted out of the Chamber of Origin at the state capitol. The deadline would have fallen last week, but was delayed because of spring break. Ryan, your thoughts on any bills which did or didn't make it past the deadline?
Well, we're taping on Thursday, so there's the chance that this could come back. But House Bill 1538 by Representative Emily Virgin died in a House vote earlier this week on Wednesday by a vote of 47-41, failed to get the majority necessary to pass. This bill would update Oklahoma's HIV and AIDS education protocol in the state of Oklahoma for students in K-12 schools. We have an AIDS education program in the state of Oklahoma that dates back to the 1980s. It cast an awful stigma on the LGBT community in the state of Oklahoma. It's not based in evidence and frankly doesn't even teach about HIV that leads to AIDS. So, I mean, we have an educational system here that is falling behind the dramatic increase in evidence and scientific research that's happened since the 1980s to 2017. It's a shame that this bill died. I think that, you know, there was some questioning on the floor. You know, Representative Chuck Strom, a Republican of Bixby, asked Representative Virgin if he thought that this was if this bill represented Oklahoma values. I don't even know what that means. I mean, again, this goes back to this idea that, you know, we're not grown up enough. At least our legislators aren't grown up enough to have adult conversations about these issues. This is an issue that is literally a life or death issue, and it's one that if we have solid education out there, lives can ultimately be saved.
Neva.
Well, the thing I was very pleased about was the fact that we saw this week 12 bills that were criminal justice reform measures that made it through some in the House, some in the Senate, and all seemed to be on very positive courses of action to wind up on the governor's desk. And I think this is one of those hallmarks that we've talked about from Governor Fallon's standpoint. She has kind of seized this mantle, has been very proactive in trying to engage the legislature, engage the larger conversation about the need for this. And so hopefully we won't see any derailment. We won't see any last-minute efforts to slow any of this down. And I think this can be one of the brightest spots in this legislative session to see come out of it.
Well, and with the Criminal Justice Task Force bills, I mean, that's, you're right, huge news, bright spot in this legislative session. And that's happening at the same week when House Bill 1482, which did pass out of the House, unfortunately, mm-hmm. and has landed in the Senate. The original Senate author withdrew his name. They've got a new Senate author. That bill seems to have some chaos and turmoil around it. You know, so the efforts to repeal State Question 780, take away the voice of the people on criminal justice reform, that seems to have be losing some momentum this week, while at the same time some more positive criminal justice reforms seem to be gaining traction.
And I think let's put some of that at the feet of Ralph Shorty, having been one of the folks that had been espousing, you know, the anti-effort on that part. And I think people, as they stepped back and paid more attention to the details, saw that there was there were a lot more reasons to be favorable to what was going on rather than against it.
Oklahoma County Sheriff candidate Mike Christian is facing another issue over endorsement. The Oklahoma Highway Patrol has had to announce it isn't endorsing the former state representative after Christian released flyers with him in his former trooper uniform. Now, last year, he released flyers saying his candidacy was endorsed by Oklahoma Congressman Steve Russell, Tom Cole, and Senator James Lankford. Neva, your thoughts on this?
Well, it's a bad pattern, and I think it's an unregrettable pattern in any election, and certainly in this special election. I mean, we have a situation where why would you continue to do something that continues to raise these issues and create these problems for your own campaign, let alone raise a lot of issues, I think, in the minds of the voters. So there's those fine lines. And I think in this particular instance, this campaign and the previous campaign, we've seen a lot of this. I mean, saying that you lettered on a football team when you were the equipment manager, well, you still lettered on the football team, but are you telling really a truthful representation to the public of what you're trying to convey? So I think people are paying attention to some of this, and I hope they pay more attention as they get ready to go to the polls.
Right.
You know, both of these campaigns, the special election and then Mike Christian's last campaign against John Wetzel in that general election in which Wetzel prevailed. Both of those campaigns, I think, were Mike Christian's to lose, and he lost the first one. And it was largely in part because of these missteps in the last few weeks of the campaign. And again, here, you know, this is, I think that he walks into this as a front runner, both in the Republican primary, but in a lot of folks' minds, a front runner going into that general election. And then he does something like this. Campaigns, you know, give voters a lot of, maybe don't give voters a lot of actual information about where candidates stand. But if you look a little bit further than that, you can see about the kind of decision-making process that they go through. You know, what are their judgment? What kind of judgment do they have? Do they have good quality judgment? And in this, if this had been his first instance of this, we might say, oh, well, he made a mistake. He wanted to let folks know that he was in the Highway Patrol. But again, going back to, you know, Michael's intro to that and Neva's commentary, this is not his first time to do this. And I think that, you know, voters really are going to take a look at that and say, does this person have the judgment necessary to be sheriff of the largest county in the state of Oklahoma? And if you continue to repeat, you know, elementary mistakes like this, can we trust you to hold that office? And I think that's going to be a question that voters are going to have walking into the voting booth.
And do you think his opponents will keep working on this, making sure it stays in the headlines that he made a decision like this?
Well, you know, I think when you have a four-way race, a winner-take-all primary, every campaign probably is more focused on just getting their message out than trying to hammer on maybe one of the other folks. But these issues continue to rise to the surface and be in the public domain where people are paying attention to it. So I don't think it's avoidable, and I think it is a case where every campaign needs to focus on not making miscues and mistakes like this, and so we'll see what happens.
Finally, a long-standing lawmaker says he's leaving his position at the end of the legislative session. Representative Scott Martin announces he's leaving to head the Norman Chamber of Commerce. Ryan, you served with Scott Martin when you were in the House, correct?
Yeah. We came in. He came in 2 years after I did. I was elected in 2004. He came in 2006. And, you know, I think that what we're beginning to see here are, you know, the results of term limits. You know, a guy like Scott Martin, you know, if you're in your last term, which he is, he's ineligible to run. He can't run for the Senate. This is it for his career in the legislature. And so you begin to look at other campaigns, other races, other ways to serve. And, you know, when a job like this comes open, you know, I think it's tough to say no. Now, you know, he at least, I think, had the decency to say, I'm going to serve out the remainder of this session so that the folks in his house district don't go without representation during this legislative session. But it's still going to cost money for a special election. And, you know, I think that, you know, these lawmakers, as they're at the end of their legislative careers and trying to think about what's that next step, they're not everyone has the luxury of saying, well, I'll wait and find something whenever I leave. And so how do they balance that? And I think that it's unfortunate that he's had to do this. And, you know, to lose an 11-year lawmaker in your House district, that's somebody who has a lot of experience, expertise, and as well as influence that they've built up over that time with the legislature. To see them walk away a year early from that is going to be tough for that district.
Not just an 11-year, he's also served as A and B chair, so yeah. He really Absolutely. Knows his way around there.
Yeah, he's had an incredible career, and you served with him. I've had the opportunity to work with him over the 11 years, and he is a reflection of the best of what I would say we hope to see in Oklahoma lawmakers. I mean, he's someone who's represented his district well. Has scored high marks among his colleagues, among those that he's worked with at every level. And I think you're right, Ryan. I mean, they cannot create the perfect exit strategy when they're looking at a legislative career that's run its course. And then for someone young with a young family and looking to the future, this was an opportunity that came along clearly and was one of those moments where it either was then or not. And so it was a national search, as I understand it, that the Norman Chamber embarked on. He made the short list, certainly someone that I think knows Norman well, and the community have been very positive on Scott Martin in his career in the community, service on multiple boards and commissions, his banking experience in the community. So I think for Norman, it's a win-win. I mean, the district loses a legislator a year early, but the community continues to have someone who will, I think, be a very strong advocate for the business community, very strong advocate for Norman across the board. And I applaud him and congratulate him on his new job that will begin on June the 1st after he leaves his tenure this year, May 31st, after the session ends.
And it's interesting, you know, we've seen some other lawmakers leave the legislature and go to these chamber positions, either to head up chambers or to serve in some sort of advisory capacity or a lobbying capacity for chambers around the state. And generally when they have, and in particular whenever you've seen Republican or conservative lawmakers and they walk into those positions, they realize, hey, wait a second, you know, this isn't about all social issues. You know, this is, you know, and they drop away from some of that. And I think Scott Martin already has a leg up on that. You know, one of the big things that chambers of commerce are recognizing around the state of Oklahoma is that our criminal justice system is bankrupting us. It's ripping apart communities and families, and it's literally bankrupting the state and the amount of money that we have to spend towards it. And Scott was one of the handful of Republican no votes on House Bill 1482 whenever it came out of the House last week. So,
that's right.
You know, he's got a leg up on that. I think that he's going to walk into this chamber position and transition over there very well.
Yeah, and I think as president and CEO, he will not only be an advocate for Norman, but he will be someone that will be able to relate in terms of not only statewide, but on federal issues as well, and have a good relationship with our delegation. So it certainly offers a lot of promising prospects for him. And, you know, he's one of those guys, when you look at his legislative career and match it with his personal story. I mean, here's someone who came to the legislature. He now, 11 years later, I mean, he and Angie now have 4 children. They're very involved in the community and the schools, and I think it shows that you can balance. I mean, you can have a life that is very productive and have public service as part of that, and I applaud him for what he's done in the Oklahoma legislature.
There you go. Ryan and Neva's comments do not necessarily reflect the views of the ACLU, KOSU, its staff, or management.